Hello, UCLA Radio. This is Dr. No, and we are about to hear my interview with James Bovard, author of Lost Rights, The Fair Trade Fraud, The Bush Betrayal, and Attention Deficit Democracy. His most recent book is Public Policy Hooligan, available in ebook format. And so without further ado, here is our interview, brought to you by The Bloop and UCLAradio.com. All right. So, well, first off, I just want to thank you for joining us because, I mean, you are, I can't say I've read all your work, but you are rapidly becoming one of my favorite writers. Like, I've read several of your
books. Well, thanks. That's very kind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I read two of your books, several of your articles, and some of your blog posts as well. And, like, I think it's safe to say that you have a passion for writing. And have you always had a passion for writing?
Well, since I was 18. Which I guess goes back a ways at this point. But there's a certain joy in trying to take an idea and express it very clearly and in a way that resonates with people, that drives home the idea and that breaks through the complacency people often have to taking a different perspective on public policy.
I see. And when did you first start getting interested in public policy?
Oh, I guess in the early 1970s, I was a high school student. I was wheeling and dealing in spare coins and buying a little bit of gold and silver, not a great amount. Mm-hmm. But I was watching how the Nixon administration was wrecking the U.S. economy. They took the U.S. off the gold standard, took the dollar off the gold standard. They imposed wage and price controls. And there just seemed to be so many different vicious things the U.S. government was doing that was hobbling the economy. And at the same time, the Vietnam War was coming to an end, and the government just looked so venal in so many different ways. And that kind of shaped my views as I was coming of age in my late teens.
I see. Yeah, I know, but you have some interesting views. You were like, well, in the parlance, I would say of the less politically active you are conservative on like fiscal issues, but liberal on like foreign policy and civil liberties and stuff like that. Would you care to explain your stance to our listeners who might be this being exposed to you for the first time?
Sure. Well, basically, I'm skeptical of government power across the board. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of liars in both the Republicans and the Democrats. Mm-hmm. The last three presidents attest to that. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's a mistake to give deference to the rulers in general, and that people in a free society have to always be skeptical any time a politician is trying to grab more power over them.
I see. Yeah, so you are more on the libertarian right, and I guess what you might call the some of the more traditional left, like Hunter S. Thompson and like Howard Zinn.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. Hunter S. Thompson's great.
Mm-hmm. He was fantastic. Another of my favorite writers.
I guess that means that you enjoy guns.
Well, I mean, I haven't had much experience with them. I mean, one time I went to a shooting range, and I am almost blacked out because there's a policeman there, and he let me use his gun. But I wouldn't mind getting into them at some point. Maybe when I get some money after I graduate.
Yeah, well, I think it'd be difficult to be into guns as much as Hunter S. Thompson was. He was pretty much of a maniac.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, I mean... It's just like, I mean, I'm bad enough as it is at sports, and I can't, like, I mean, it'll be a real undertaking for me to do that. But I do appreciate his writing a lot. I can appreciate that. And I won't black out.
He's someone who had a wonderful, skeptical, if not cynical, attitude towards the government. Mm-hmm. And he was mostly correct.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. Like, I mean, sometimes, like, it's almost surprising that he's lumped in with the left wing because he is, like, so skeptical of government and he likes guns, you know? It's just really interesting how much times have changed since he was writing.
Yeah, it's funny how the definitions have shifted over time and how issues that were important in the 1970s are no longer important. and vice versa. It's too bad Hunter S. Thompson's not still around, because I'm sure he'd be giving hell to lots of politicians.
I really would like to see what he would have thought of the Obama administration, you know, just like, really, I'm like, wow, it'd be really cool, like, just see what he would write, you know, and like, I mean, although he did, I remember he did support Bill Clinton initially during the 90s, just to keep George H. Bush out of the office, but then he regretted it, so, yeah.
Understandably. It's kind of like H.L. Mencken initially supported Franklin Roosevelt.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yep, Mencken voted for Roosevelt in 1932.
Oh my goodness, I had no idea. Wow.
Yeah, well, he was, I think he had hopes from the Democrats, because I think he naturally leaned towards the Democratic Party, but it was more the Democratic Party of Grover Cleveland.
I see. Yeah, and, that was a time when the Democrats were, enthusiastic about government, and even anti-imperialistic too, wasn't it? Like you had
there were a number of elements of the Democratic Party that were very, very positive. I think a lot of the Democrats opposed McKinley's Spanish-American War, the seizure of the Philippines, the brutal massacres of the Filipinos that the U.S. committed in the early 1900s. I think that the Republicans were more enthusiastic on World War I, and there were a lot of things. And on tariffs, Democrats were far better prior to the New Deal.
Huh. Yeah, what's it called? In fact, I think Woodrow Wilson, he was a progressive, but he was also a free trader, and I always thought that was interesting. Is that, or at least that's what I've heard, is there any truth to that?
I don't recall Wilson's attitude on trade. He was probably better than many folks out there. There were so many other things which Wilson did that were so horrendous, and supposed to see for growth of government power for the rest of the century. His trade standards don't really matter that much. Well, it would have been nice as far as free trade if he kept the U.S. out of the damn World War I.
Yeah,
that's like the ultimate trade embargo.
Yeah, I could imagine that would do wonders for the nations involved. You know, just instead of killing each other, just trading. Yeah.
Oh, it would save a lot of paperwork.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
And veterans' pensions.
Mm-hmm. And lives too. Not to mention that. Yes. And speaking of free trade, one of your earliest books was about trade, and it was called The Fair Trade Fraud. And what was the this came out like in the, was it the late 80s or early 90s? And what was the thesis of it?
It came out in 1991. Mm-hmm. This was at a time when folks like Pat Buchanan and others were calling, saying that the U.S. had to become far more protectionist, that we basically had to close our harbors to foreign goods far more than what we were already doing, mm-hmm. and that that having high tariffs would make us prosper again. Happily, Pat Buchanan, the protections got shot down. But what I tried to do in that book was walk people through to make them realize that the U.S. already had a great number of trade barriers, and that the trade barriers we had usually made little or no sense. One of the things which I was trying to get on that was a copy of the U.S. tariff code, because there were a lot of tariffs which were listed as in kilograms or dozens or quantity numbers and not percentage numbers, and I had the hunch that those ones were not listed as percentile tariffs were actually the highest tariffs. So I contacted federal agencies. I tried to get this information. I followed the rules, and everybody told me it didn't exist. So I was doing a trip over in Europe, and I stopped by Geneva, Switzerland. And I went to the headquarters of the GATT, the General Agreement on Trade and Tariffs, and which was the group that was overseeing the international trade talks at that point. And I was interviewing some people there for that Fair Trade Fraud book. And as I was leaving, I was walking down the long hallway, and I was passing by an office that had the label Office of Tariff Affairs. And there, right in front of that building, in front of that office, was this cardboard table with this stack of thick documents. And as I was walking past, I glanced down and saw that it was a secret proposal by the U.S. government on their Mm-hmm. And I said, oh. So I didn't even stop walking. I just snatched one up, put it in my shoulder bag, and kept on going. And once I got out of the building, I checked it and realized that these were the secret numbers that I was looking for. And the tariffs were as high as 450%.
Oh, wow.
And they were far higher than what the U.S. government had admitted. So I was able to use some of those numbers to really embarrass the protectionists of the U.S. government and in Congress.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. And what did... Do you feel that these numbers, like your exposure to these numbers, like had any they shifted the debate about trade significantly? Because I mean, you don't hear about trade anymore, really, do you?
I don't know if it shifted the debate, but it was sure as hell fun to embarrass the government. and it was because so many of the politicians the politician would insist that the U.S. was being victimized by its free trade policy.
Mm-hmm.
And my attitude was that was complete BS because we didn't have free trade.
Mm.
And so that helped me shoot down some of their claims. And it kind of spiced up some of the trade debate. And things have gotten better over the last 20 years as far as trade policy. It's rare to hear people that are as overtly protectionist. Though it's kind of bounced back some of the notion of fair trade, coffee and things like that. And, and people who advocate that, I always ask, so what is the tariff which we should have for this product or that product? And people rarely have a good answer on that. And what they say is, well, just trust the government. That's worked out very badly in U.S. history as far as tariff policy.
I see. And you criticize Bill Clinton, and I haven't read The Bush Betrayal, but I assume you criticize him on this front, too, for for increasing protectionist policies. And